Next case, please.
Next application is case number 11-487, the application Nanticoke Crossing Limited Partnership. Site is located west of John J. Williams Highway, Route 24, 492 feet north of Indian Mission Road, which is Route 5, also known as Route 23, with a 911 address of 24832 John J. Williams Highway, Millsboro, Delaware, with a tax map ID of District 234, map 23, parcel number 269.12. It's requesting a special use exception to place a telecommunications tower and a variance from the minimum separation from a residentially zoned lot. Gentlemen, I've received no letters of support, no letters of opposition. I did receive one mail return on this application. Thanks, sir. All the same. Gentlemen, for the record, the applicants have just provided us a copy of an exhibit booklet.
No. Jesus.
Yeah, I was going to say, watch your.
Yeah, I'll just take this one.
All the same.
All the same.
Yep. Just pass it.
Well, he's having a little problem with his wing there.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Christopher Schubert, and I'm here tonight representing the co-applicants, Selco Partnership, doing business as Verizon Wireless, and also the developer of the proposed cell tower, Capital Telecom Acquisition, LLC. And I'm appearing here tonight with my co-counsel, Jonathan Jordan, as well.
Okay.
I do have a number of witnesses who would be available to testify. I do have some experts, and I should have all those witnesses sworn at this time.
If you would, please. Thank you.
Do you want them one at a time? Can you state your name and address for the record?
Jeff Nagorny, Advantage Engineers, 1025 Andrew Drive, Westchester, PA.
Okay. And if you step aside, I'll swear you all in at once.
Yep.
Excuse me. John Harriet, Advantage Engineers, 520 Fellowship Road, Mount Laurel, New Jersey.
Okay.
Scott Von Ryan, Capital Telecom, 1500 Mount Kemble Boulevard, Morristown, New Jersey.
Thank you.
Hi. Paul Dugan, D-U-G-A-N, and my firm is Millennium Engineering PC. Business address is 508 Ferncastle, that's one word, F-E-R-N-C-A-S-T-L-E, Drive, Downingtown, PA, 19335.
Okay. And do you all swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. And for the record, Mr. Chairman, we have received business cards from the applicants with their information on it.
Thank you.
I'll submit that to Ms. Patford.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, just in order of procedure, these witnesses are available to testify in an answer and question format, but if the board prefer, I could go through a summary of the application, call each of the witnesses up to confirm the summary of the testimony, if that's the board.
That would be good, too.
Okay. I know that this board has dealt with other telecommunications applications in the past. This one really is no different. What is being proposed at the Nanticoke Crossing Shopping Center, which is located at the northwest corner of Route 23 and Route 24 in Millsboro, is a proposed new cell tower site. What is being proposed by the co-applicant, Capital Telecom, is a 150-foot monopole antenna support structure, a tower, at the back part of that property, behind the main shopping center building that sits back behind the parking field. This is being principally developed for Verizon Wireless to enhance and provide coverage in an area in the county which has a significant gap in coverage presently with regard to Verizon's network. This site would be available for additional co-location of additional antennas of other providers. There are other providers such as AT&T, T-Mobile, Sprint, that are all looking to develop state-of-the-art technology and provide telecommunication service to the county, principally with regard to this application in the center part of the county near Millsboro at this point. In conjunction with the application, as stated, it would be a proposed 150-foot tall structure. On top of that structure, there would be an additional installation of a lightning rod 6 feet in height. That would provide not only protection to the tower, but protection to the surrounding properties from the standpoint that that would be grounded into the ground and any lightning strikes would be directed down and safely dissipated within the ground around the tower. Part of the development on this property is the removal of or the use of existing parking spaces at the back part of the property. In light of the fact that there are a lot of environmentally constrained areas off of where the parking field is located in the nature of wetlands and floodplain areas, there is no possibility of moving the site back off of the existing parking area into the wooded area which surrounds this property. There are fairly dense woods that exist to the west side of where this proposed cell tower would be located, to the north of where this proposed cell tower would be located, and also wrapping around to the eastern side of the property. So from that standpoint, from a visual standpoint, it's pretty well situated away and removed as far away as possible from any actively used residential areas. What brings us before the board this evening, under the telecommunications ordinance section of the county code, which is at section 115-194.2, in light of the fact that we are in a commercially zoned district, this property is in the C1 district, we are located within 500 feet of a residentially zoned or properties that could be used for residential purposes. And as a result, if we met that requirement, this use would be permitted by subsequent application to the county for site plan approval. But in light of the fact that we are located within 500 feet of properties that could be used for residential purposes, conceivably at some point in the future, we need to make application for a special use exception before this board. Part of the criteria that we would show would be compliance with all the underlying requirements in that section 115-194.2. One of the requirements is to essentially have a site acquisition consultant establish that within a 2-mile radius of this proposed facility, there is no other existing tall structures that would be adequate to support the antennas and provide the service that Verizon Wireless is seeking to obtain with regard to this proposed location. Part of the exhibit packet, you'll see, first off, moving through the exhibits, I did file a letter with Mr. Lank, which amended the application to include Verizon Wireless as a co-applicant with this application. That was marked as applicant's exhibit A2. As stated, the property is owned by Nanticoke Crossing Limited Partnership, and we have secured a letter of authorization from the Nanticoke to allow us to move forward with regard to all the zoning entitlements that would be required for this particular project. That's marked as applicant's exhibit A4. Applicant's exhibit A5 is a 2-mile map which shows the other alternate candidates that were considered to meet the underlying code requirements for the county. And essentially there were a total of 5 within that 2-mile search area. My site acquisition consultant, John Harriet, who's available here tonight to testify, was the one who actually went out to take a look and identify whether there would be any other potential existing tall structures within that 2-mile area that would be capable of supporting the antenna arrays of Verizon Wireless. The first site that was identified was item number one, MediaCom Guide Tower, which is located just to the west of where the subject property is. That is a very, very tall lattice structure. It's a guide tower that sits on a farm property of roughly about 7 acres in size. The issue with that site, and in fact that was the center of the search ring for Verizon in trying to find the coverage that it needed in this area, and anything else, everything else being equal, Verizon would have loved to have gone on that tower, but in pursuing the viability of that tower, we reached out to the manager of the MediaCom tower. There's an email that was received based upon an inquiry that was made, marked as applicant's exhibit A6, from a Haley Sorensen to John Hurriott, who is our site acquisition consultant here tonight. And essentially, the information that he received was that that tower at this point is structurally overloaded, that it could not support an additional antenna array, and in order to do any further modifications to that tower, it would essentially require bracing over about 80% of that tower to bring it up to standards at an estimated cost exceeding $200,000 for that purpose. I understand that T-Mobile had explored a swap out of some antennas on that site, and because of the costs and the unlikely nature of whether they could even do those improvements, my understanding is that T-Mobile has decided not to upgrade its service and not to provide upgraded antennas just because they don't want to touch that that tower at this point. So from that standpoint, the site acquisition consultant ruled out that site. They then took a look at a site to the northwest, which is an American Tower site, and that's indicated as site number two within that 2-mile search ring. That site is already occupied by Verizon Wireless. Verizon already has an active site at that location, and you'll see that a little later in some other exhibits of the propagation plans that show that there is propagation coverage. There's already wireless coverage coming from that site. We are now interested in the site kind of sitting between that site and a site which is out further to the east. The other site that was considered was an American Tower site, which is located almost due north of the subject property. Identified as item number three within that search ring. And the radio frequency engineer would testify that that site is too far to the north. Given its distance, it pulls coverage too far to the north of where the targeted coverage area was, which was the businesses and residents within Millsboro. And again, we'll see that at a subsequent exhibit that shows the gap in coverage that Verizon is now looking to cover. That well may be a possible candidate for a future application before this board, but at this point in the development and the upgrades of the Verizon network, that site is just too far to the north. Dropping down all the way to the south is item number four, which is a water tank. It's an existing standpipe, which is owned by Tidewater Utilities. And again, for the similar reason of the one site being too far to the north, this site is too far to the south. And as a result, might satisfy a future build-out for Verizon's network and further development of its upgrades. But the target area right now is Millsboro. And that site was, by the radio frequencies investigation, just too far to the south. There is a fifth site, which is located out to the east, which is a very, very small lattice tower, which is on the Indian River Fire Department off of Banks Road. That is a very small, slender lattice tower that just supports a couple of WIP antennas for the fire company's use for emergency communications. It would in no way, shape, or form be structurally sufficient to handle the larger antenna array that Verizon Wireless would seek to add to that tower. And then finally, although outside of that 2-mile search ring, the site acquisition consultant doing his job and doing a good job bringing back any potential candidates that could be feasible, there is a county-owned tower to the extreme west of where the subject property is, which is identified as item number six, the Sussex County Tower. That's also a large, as I understand, a guide tower, but was too far to the west to be of any service in providing the coverage again to the Millsboro area. And that would be supported by testimony from the radio frequency engineer, Mr. Dugan, who's here tonight. So they were the existing tall structures that were considered. One of the other issues that needs to be dealt with under the telecommunications section of the county ordinance is to show that co-location is viable and that the applicants are committed to providing additional co-location opportunities on any proposed new tower. There is an affidavit that has been submitted with regard to the application, which is marked as Applicant's Exhibit A9, and that commits that this tower would be capable of additional antenna arrays, at least two additional antenna arrays that would be available for the site. And in fact, I understand that the site plans in this site is being proposed to afford up to four co-locations on this tower. So that would include Verizon plus three other potential co-locators in the future. Testimony from the site acquisition consultant would be that that could also include emergency communication services, fire, police, if there was a need for that on the tower. Mr. Harry would further discuss utilizing the aerial exhibit, which is marked as Applicant's Exhibit A8, that the site is particularly suited for this proposed use. As stated, there is a significant natural wooded buffer, very dense woods that exists just to the east, to the west of the site, to the north of the site, and wrapping around to the east of the site, so that this tower would be tucked back behind that existing shopping center building, away from flow of traffic and also away from any other commercial use off the site and residences that are across Route 24, which are over 500 feet away. And from a site acquisition standpoint, Mr. Hurry would testify that this proposed location would have no substantial adverse impact on surrounding properties and would be appropriate with land uses in and around the area, and also would recognize that this applicant, Capital Telecom, would have to move forward with the county to obtain further site plan approval from the county for the proposed use. The next witness I would call would be the radio frequency engineer. His name is Paul Dugan, and Mr. Dugan would testify that he actually went out and has studied this location and has done propagation studies to confirm the need for coverage in this area, and would testify that Millsboro itself was the center of the gap that Verizon was looking to cover and also to provide upgraded state-of-the-art, what they call 4G telecommunications service. Mr. Dugan would testify that Verizon Wireless is licensed by the Federal Communications Commission, and marked as Applicant's Exhibit A10 are a series of license abstracts that summarize all the licenses that are held by Verizon in what is known as the Philadelphia-Wilmington market. And Sussex County would be included within this license area, and that as a result of this license, which is in full force and effect, that Verizon Wireless is expected to adhere to all the rules and regulations established by the FCC for constructing and operating these types of facilities. Mr. Dugan would then testify that he prepared a radio frequency report, which is marked as Applicant's Exhibit A11, to address the substantial need that the applicant has and another ordinance requirement that's found in the county code. And the report is self-explanatory, but goes through essentially the consideration of the gap and consideration of the existing sites, which I had mentioned before, that site number two, which is indicated as being or identified by Verizon as the Angola site, which is 401-foot guide tower, and Verizon Wireless is at 251 feet on that tower. The other site, which is out to the east, is identified as the Verizon site Longport. That's a 141-foot monopole, and Verizon is at 137 feet on that tower. And in doing the analysis, Mr. Dugan identified the gap, and that's marked as applicant's exhibit A12. And this provides a colored map that essentially shows coverage in a purple color and lack of reliable coverage in essentially a white or non-color. And just for point of reference, this exhibit shows the crossroads of 23 and 24, and just to the northwest corner of that is where the Nanticoke Crossing Shopping Center is located. Coverage coming from the Angola site is seen on this exhibit as being the purple area to the northwest or to the left of that exhibit. Coverage from the other site is located all the way to the east, and again is showing up in purple, and the gap in coverage is that area between these two locations. Of course, Millsboro is just located, and the principal commercial and residential sections are located just to the southeast of that intersection. Mr. Dugan would testify then that the next exhibit, A13, shows the proposed coverage that Verizon Wireless would secure if, in fact, there was a new monopole established on the Nanticoke Crossing Shopping Center with antennas being at a centerline height of 150 feet. He would testify that in the event that the antenna height would drop down below that, that the coverage from that area, which is showing up here in kind of a salmon color between the two purple colors, that coverage would begin to shrink if the antenna height comes down. Of course, if the antenna height goes up, you'd be able to get a little bit more coverage out of it, but you don't want the antennas to be too high, otherwise you get into a potential interference problem with adjoining sites. So there's always a fine balance between not going too high and not going too low. And Mr. Dugan would testify that in order to provide the reliable coverage to the significant portion of Millsboro, which this site is designed to provide, that height of 150 feet is necessary for the center line of the Verizon antennas. Mr. Dugan did a propagation analysis of the alternate site that had been identified at the American Tower site to the north, and that's marked as applicant's exhibit A14, and that shows, as I had summarized, the coverage being pulled too far to the north away from the commercial and residential areas of Millsboro. Again, possible consideration for future development of another site for Verizon, or future co-location, I should say, for Verizon antennas. But at this point, the focus is the Millsboro business and residential areas. In order to establish that there's no substantial adverse impact from this proposed use, another consideration that Mr. Dugan considered was the radio frequency emissions and whether they would create any sort of health or safety concerns. He was commissioned to do a report, which he prepared and marked as applicant's exhibit A15. And this report concludes that when he does the analysis in accordance with the FCC rules and regulations and plugs in the necessary information given the frequency and the power levels from the antennas, that in a worst case scenario, this facility would operate more than 100 times below the accepted level by the FCC. And in fact, many times, it's actually well below, he concludes, 1% of the limit that's been established as acceptable and safe by the FCC. So from that standpoint, there would be no adverse concern from radio wave emissions from the site. He was also requested to do an interference analysis and to consider whether there would be any potential adverse impact from interference on surrounding properties arising from interference with radio or television, any other radio-based technology. And by this report, Mr. Dugan has concluded because Verizon operates at a fixed radio frequency that there would be very little possibility of any interference caused with any other radio or television-based technologies. If there was any problem, that would be flagged by the FCC, and that would be something that Verizon Wireless would have to immediately correct and resolve. And then finally, from Mr. Dugan's standpoint, there is a requirement under the county code that the structure be lit with lights at every 50 feet of elevation on that tower. The applicant is more than happy to comply with that requirement. We have requested with the application a variance from that because there was an analysis done under the Federal Aviation Administration rules and regulations that indicate that there is no requirement that this structure needs to be lit for air traffic safety. And as a result, the applicant is willing to put the lights in, but if this board would mandate that. But other than that, there is no need from an FAA standpoint. The nearest airport is over 5 miles away, which is the first benchmark with regard to FAA regulation. And in this instance, because of the distances involved, there is no concern with regard to air traffic navigation. I should also mention that Mr. Dugan would testify that the site itself would be fully automated. There would be no need for any office space, no need for any public water or sewer with the facility. It would be manned, it would be monitored remotely for 24/7 from a remote monitoring station. If there was any need for maintenance, that would occur only very infrequently. And you might have a maintenance technician showing up once every 4 to 6 weeks to the facility, driving up in an SUV and being at the site for approximately a half hour to 45 minutes to run some diagnostics on the facility, and that would be it. So from that standpoint, there is no adverse impact on traffic. There's no real traffic generation arising from the use. And it's, from that standpoint, very innocuous. In terms of the design, what Verizon would need are 12 panel-style antennas that would be mounted at the top of the tower. Cables for those antennas would be placed within the monopole itself and would be connected up to equipment located within a radio shelter, an equipment shelter located at the base of the facility. The facility itself would be surrounded by a 6-foot-tall fence, which is required by county code. And again, since it was since it would be completely automated, there would be no need for other public services for this facility. So that would be in large part the summary of testimony, Mr. Dugan. And finally, I would call the last witness, and that would be Mr. Jeff McGorney, who is a licensed engineer with the state of Delaware. He was in charge of and the project lead for overseeing the preparation of the site plans that have been prepared for this particular site. He would go through the nature of the site, would identify it as being zoned within the C1 commercial district, the property being just over 6 acres in size, has been a shopping center for a number of years and operated as such. Would testify that in terms of setbacks, the tower, the county code requires a setback for the tower equal to 1/3 the height of the tower. When you factor in the lightning rod extension, bringing it to a total of 156 feet, the required setback for the tower would be 52 feet from any adjoining property lines. Mr. McGorney would testify that given the placement of the tower where proposed, the tower would comply with all those applicable setbacks. The tower would be placed within, right now, what is an existing parking area. comprising 8 spaces at the back part of the shopping center building. Those spaces would be 20 by 80 feet in size for a total compound area of 1,600 square feet. As stated, that would be fenced with a 6-foot fence. Design of the fence would be really at the option of the board and ultimately at the county. What is initially being proposed is a cyclone fence, but if ultimately the board or the county, I'm sorry, 8-foot. It is committed to be an 8-foot board-on-board fence, which will add in concealing any of the improvements within the compound itself from any of the adjacent properties or adjoining uses. Mr. Nagornik would testify that it would be designed so that it would be available for co-location of up to 3 additional co-locators. That at this point in time, the tower itself has not been designed, but should zoning entitlements be secured and ultimate site plan approval be approved by the county, that a structural engineer would design the proposed monopole. It would be designed in accordance with the required standards, which are set forth in the International Building Code. Those standards are called the EIA-TIA Standards 222 Current Revision G, which are very stringent standards. Mr. Nagornik would testify that if the facility is designed, constructed, and maintained in accordance with those standards, there would be very little likelihood of any structural failure, any concern of structural failure as a result of anything that could be thrown at that tower. Ultimately, when the time would come, there would be a soil study done of the soil characteristics of the facility, and then a foundation would be designed also in accordance with those standards. Mr. Nagornik would further go on to testify regarding the need or the that there would be no adverse impact on surrounding properties arising from this proposed facility. It would be designed as a galvanized steel monopole. Cables would be mounted inside, and given the existing natural buffer, that would be maintained to the greatest extent possible. There would be no adverse visual impact from adjoining properties based upon consideration of distances involved and the maturity of the tree and woods that are surrounding the tower. There would be no impact or adverse impact on traffic, sewer capacity, water capacity, schools, or natural resources. The placement and construction of the telecommunications facility would comply with all applicable natural resource protection standards set forth within the county code. And essentially, there would be no hazard to health, safety, or welfare to the community as a result of this proposed use. And in fact, the community, in terms of communication, both personal communication, business communication, and for emergency communications, all those would be enhanced. So ultimately would provide a benefit to those Verizon users and anyone who, with emergency services, ambulance, police, fire, would be using Verizon services for those types of communications. I have reviewed the county code from the standpoint that our application is for a special use exception. And with the alternative for the variance for the lighting, I know that the ordinance or the notice that went out had advertised also the need for a variance. I'd be happy to talk about some of the variance requirements and how we meet the variance requirements, but quite frankly, I'm at a loss as to when I look at the county code as to how the variance for the setback applies in this particular instance. With that, unless there are any questions, my witnesses are available to answer any of the questions that the board or the public might have, and I would move my exhibits at this point into evidence.
We'll start out and we'll see. Are there any questions from members of the board at this time? We'll start out with you, Mr. Hudson, if you may have, for any of the witnesses.
None at the moment.
Not at the moment, okay.
I believe you said you don't know how to approach the variance for your setback.
I do know how to approach it, but when I read the county code, at section 115.194.2, I see that if we are in a commercial district and we met the setback, we could just proceed forward by site plan approval. We are only triggered into the special use exception if we are within 500 feet of a residentially zoned district or a property that could be used right. for residential purposes. So I'm looking at it from the standpoint that we're moving forward with a special use exception.
Well, you can also approach that with your standards for granting a variance.
Correct.
Okay. So when you present your case, I think you've you haven't covered those, have you?
Well, let me address those.
When you do, go down the list so that we can hear your answers to that. I mean, you've done a lot of presentation, which is great, but...
Well, let me talk about the five criteria then in terms of a variance. From the standpoint of uniqueness of the property,
right.
This property has, as I mentioned, and is reflected on the approved site plans for the Nanticoke Crossing Shopping Center. There are a lot of environmentally constrained sections of the property that are off of the developed sections. When the applicant was looking to possibly develop so that we were further removed from any residential adjoining properties, they looked in that wooded area that shows up on the aerial photograph of the property. All those areas to the western side of the property are wetland areas and floodplain areas and can't be developed. They're very low-lying, very wet conditions. So as a result, the applicant for this proposed use was restricted to the existing improvements that are on the property and was limited in terms of where they could locate on the property to meet the requirement.
So that's a uniqueness.
It creates a uniqueness okay. on the property. Over and above that, in terms of the possibility of development of the site, again, because of the uniqueness and trying to configure this use of the property for telecommunications use, there was only limited areas on the property where that could be done. And in this instance, the applicant is constrained in terms of the physics of essentially radio wave propagation. We can't control the law of the physics and how the radio waves are propagated. And when the network has been developed, our radio frequency engineer would testify that you can't pick and choose locations freely, that you have limited areas in which you can go to locate to try to fill in significant gaps. So from the standpoint of the possibility of development of the property for telecommunications use, there is no way of doing that without the grant of this setback area and to make the site work within the network that Verizon has. And again, for the same reason that we didn't create the law of physics, Verizon didn't create the law of physics. That hardship is not self-created to Verizon. They kind of have to take what they can do with any given site, and as I stated before in my summary testimony, the sites can't be too high or too low.
So that hasn't, the practical difficulty based on what you just said is not created by you, is that what you're saying?
That's correct. Okay.
All right, go ahead.
And the use itself will not alter the essential character of the property, its surrounding properties. Again, we have a significant vegetative buffer, significant wooded areas that exist on three sides wrapped around where this proposed cell site would be located. It is far removed from the existing residential uses, which are located across Route 24 to the east. But that is a commercial area. So, and this is a commercial use. So essentially this is a more dense area, more business active area with a lot of traffic from Route 23 and Route 24. And as a result, there would be no adverse impact on the central character of the neighborhood. Okay. And then finally, again, the request for the height of 150 feet. Again, you can't have it too high, you can't have it too low, in order to have this to be an adequate facility to meet the coverage needs for Verizon to nicely fit within that puzzle piece of the two adjoining sites, the one to the west and the one to the east. So the 150 feet, the radio frequency engineer would testify as the least modification would be necessary. And in terms of placement and trying to achieve the overall coverage objective for Verizon.
So that's the minimum that
yes.
afford, really.
Correct.
All right. Okay, so that answers those questions to the variance, and you've answered the standards for special use exception. Okay, that's all the questions I have, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Murphy?
You said lights on the towers. Is there, the other towers, they have lights on that's around that area?
John, do you know the answer to that?
Sir, if you can come up to the mic so we can catch on the mic.
John Harriet, who's the site architect.
I believe the Mediacom tower does, which is much higher. I think it's 351 feet.
Or will they be soft lights? Like in the daytime, I mean, nighttime, be a soft light, then in the daytime, be a brighter light?
On the Mediacom tower?
No, if you put those lights on.
I don't know that it's required.
Mr. Von Ryan, who's with the tower company, Capital Telecom.
Good evening. If we're required to put lights on the tower per your code, the FAA requires that you meet their standards of doing so. So if we were to light the tower, in order to do it properly per the FAA, we would have to put a strobe light at the top and an intermediate halfway, two intermediate bright red lights halfway. I believe your code says every 50 feet, but that would be against what the FAA's requirements are.
There's a lot of pilots around it, dust cropping.
Sure.
Does that. And the other question I got, on the generator, is there a generator in the net containment too?
That will be in the shelter.
Yeah.
In the shelter, a generator.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And it'll be exercised too?
Yes.
You're required to have that now, aren't you?
Yes. Yeah, it's required by the, after earlier standing.
Yeah, that's what required.
Right.
Okay.
Home no security.
No other questions.
Mr. Mills?
Mr. Blank, I don't, the applicant is suggesting that he has requested a variance for the lighting, but I don't see that on the application, and I was curious as to that, if it was advertised.
It was, the text, if you look at the ordinance, the primary request was for the variance from the required spacing from residentially zoned lots or land.
Land.
He does have an affidavit with, let me see what tab it was here. Over the application, I'm sorry, not in the booklet. Over the application, he did have, let me find it. Addendum A, which provide the background, and then the request for relief was a part of the record.
Okay.
That was a part of the application record when it came in.
And it was advertised as such?
The advertisement was for, let me get the correct ads here. It was for the place of telecommunication tower, which is a special exception, and variances from the minimum separation from residentially zoned property. For lots.
But not for the lights?
No, did not include lights.
So that means they've got to adhere to that?
That means the
lights. Or file another variance?
No, I think the applicant is okay with the lights.
Okay.
We just.
Just to get that off the table there.
Mr. Mills, any? Anyone else, any questions?
Yeah.
Okay. You got a question?
Yeah. You were saying that Little used the parking spaces to get back to the parking spaces. Who determined that they won't need those 8 spaces? Did you determine that, or the owner?
Well,
You say they're not used, and
I know that.
I know when you get a plan, okay, goes to the commission that they tell you how many parking places based on your square footage and et cetera, et cetera. Will that fall into that? I don't see.
There was actually another section, and maybe this is an issue to ultimately take up with the county during the site plan. But I know that when the original site plan was approved for Nanticoke Crossing for the shopping center, it was zoned for the shopping center and approved as such, required 271 spaces. 271 spaces are provided out there right now. But there is an allowance under the ordinance at section 115-163I that says if you're changing the use, either adding to it, modifying it, and in this instance, I took the position that because we're now adding a new use, a telecommunications use.
That's where I wanted you to go. You're going there. Go ahead. Go ahead.
And for the 270, as long as you're not increasing it beyond the 10% of the required parking, which in this instance would be, if you round up, which is probably what the county would require, we'd be at 28 spots.
Right.
As long as we're not exceeding that requirement. And so if we're losing 8 spots, and we would only need essentially 1 spot for a maintenance technician for a half hour every 4 to 6 weeks, mm-hmm. We're within that 10% allowance, and therefore we don't need to be concerned about parking.
Now, I researched that portion too, and good job.
Thanks.
That's what
Thank
I wanted
you.
To hear you say.
Thanks.
Okay. It falls within the within the requirements. And one other thing I wanted to ask you was you're going to add 3 additional. Let me see. How many panels are you going to put on there?
Well, initially it would just be the 1 panel.
Okay, with 12, 12 on them?
With 12 antennas on it, correct.
Okay.
But ultimately, the county code requires that we make
be able to the
allowance for additional providers to come onto the tower, which it will be available for that use, and it's going to be designed so it could afford at least 3 additional co-locators to be on there.
Okay. No other questions?
Last question related to the thing. One statement you made earlier, you made reference to 4 available co-locators. That referencing tab 9, and then as Mr. Rickard just asked, you said late in your presentation that there will be 3 additional co-locators.
Well,
is it 4 total? 4 being Verizon, and the other 3 being others.
Maybe some confusion. Well, I was just told. I believe the site plans show a total of 4 Verizon plus 3. The ordinance, the county code requires at least 2, so we only needed to provide 2 additional. So they're making it available for a total of up to 4.
Okay.
I was just advised by Mr. Von Ryan that they could design it, if that would be the preference, of up to a total of 5, so it would be Verizon plus 4. Now, of course, that provides greater flexibility. Now would be the time to decide how beefy the tower and the foundation would have to be, because once it's designed and once it's built, it's better to have it designed, over-designed, so that you can afford additional opportunities for additional antenna arrays than try to do it after the fact.
Like Mr. Lank said, you can meet the requirements that the county wants.
Yeah, we were just going to establish that we could meet the county requirement under the code for at least 2, and maybe that's a discussion for the county later on during site plan approval as to how many additional co-locators they would
That's why I asked the question. In one statement you said 4, one statement you said 3. I assumed that the 4 was Verizon
plus 3.
1 plus 3.
Right, correct.
Okay.
Mr. Sharp?
A
couple questions.
Sure.
On the co-location, since we're talking about that, if you were to get another, let's say AT&T came on the tower, would they be able to use the same infrastructure on the ground, or would they need separate utilities themselves?
They would need a separate area within that compound, but that compound would be sufficient.
Okay.
It's being designed so that it would afford opportunity for Verizon plus the additional co-locators.
Okay, so we don't need additional compounds for each co-locator, is what you're saying?
At this point, that's correct.
And I've heard you made quite the presentation. I know you referenced some other folks who were going to be testifying. One of the things that this board, we are required to have is, and I understand you're an attorney, is that we have testimony. So if there's someone that you have that is willing to affirm your comments or statements, or persons that are willing to do that, I think we should have that person.
I should probably have each of the 4 witnesses that I summarized their testimony on. And first, Mr. Von Ryan, you were here present. You've been first off sworn in by the board, is that correct?
That's correct.
And you were present when I provided a summary of your testimony?
I was.
Is there anything that you would change or add to that summary of testimony other than what you've already did?
No.
But could you, when you bring them up, could you just tell us what area of expertise these people are in?
I represent the developer of the site, so a little bit of everything.
Okay.
The next witness is John Harriet. Mr. Harriet is a site acquisition consultant. He was retained by Verizon Wireless to do a review of the area. Mr. Harriet, you've been present when I provided a summary of your testimony?
Correct.
And you were sworn in at the start of the hearing?
Yes.
Is there anything aside from what you've already added with regard to your testimony, is there anything that you would add or further modify from my summary?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
And Mr. Dugan? Mr. Dugan is a radio frequency engineer. He's employed separately by Verizon to do an analysis of Verizon's network. Mr. Dugan's professional resume is included with the exhibit packet. Mr. Dugan, you were sworn at the start of the hearing?
Yes.
And you were present when I provided a summary of your testimony?
Yes.
Is there anything that you would add or modify to that testimony?
No.
And you would adopt that as your own?
Yes.
And finally, Mr. Jeff Nagorny. Mr. Nagorny, you're a
Mr. Schubert, how are you?
Good to see you again. You're a civil engineer licensed by the state of Delaware?
Yes, I am.
And you have particular expertise with regard to these types of facilities?
Yes.
And your CV is also part of the application packet?
Yes, it is.
And you were sworn at the start of the hearing?
Yes.
And you were here when I provided a summary of your testimony?
Yes.
Is there anything that you would add or change to that summary of testimony?
As much as I'd like to know, you pretty much hit it nail on the head.
All right, so I have no further questions of Mr. Nagorny.
Okay. No
further questions.
Any further questions for members of the board? Then? Okay, hearing no further questions. Are there any persons here that are in favor of this application? Is there anyone here in opposition to this application? Chair, hearing none, I will entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion that we approve case number 11,487. There's been no opposition. That's been your question. You have, or any in favor? Just the applicant here, and the applicant has done a good job in approaching the first of all the special use exception, as though and has made his comments there. And as I go through, he also made a good presentation as far as the standards for granting a variance for 354.33 tenths of a foot. Is that correct? That's what you're asking for. So with that, I would say that I would make a motion that we approve the special use exception, and it will not substantially affect adversely the uses of the adjacent and neighboring properties that has been in the testimony, and we do have documentation to that. Now, for the variance portion of it, the standards for granting a variance, I asked the applicant to speak to that, and he has, and the uniqueness of the property, I believe, is in, I can't use all his words, but of course, the uniqueness of the property has made it clear that it is of a shape and size that would fall into the uniqueness portion of the variance. Now, the variance is necessary for enable reasonable use of the property. Yes, he has addressed that, and it's in the record also. The unnecessary hardship or exceptional practical difficulty has not been created by the applicant. The applicant has addressed that in writing and also with his presentation. The variance will not alter the central character of the neighborhood, and the requested variance is the minimum that will afford relief.
Okay, can I have a second to that motion?
Mr. Chairman, may I?
Yeah.
Also, we have to consider that there are the standards in section 115.194.2.
Okay.
I just want to make sure that we're addressing those in your motion as well.
Okay, yes, they are. I know where you're going. Thank you. I'll make that a motion also.
That those standards have been met?
Have been met also.
And again, do I have a second then to Mr. Rickard's motion?
Second.
Okay, I have a motion by Mr. Rickard and a second by Mr. Workman. that we approve case number 11,487 for the special use exception. All those in favor of the motion, give your usual voting sign. Mr. Mills?
Aye, for the reasons stated.
Aye, for the reasons I stated.
Mr. Trestman?
Aye, for those reasons stated.
Mr. Wharton?
Aye, for those reasons stated.
And I, Mr. Calloway, for the previous reason had been stated. So by a vote of 5-0, case number 11,487 is approved.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, you did a good job. I use a...
You know, reset.